music, of course, is the theme song to one of the greatest sitcoms in television history, The Dick Van Dyke Show. My next guest was the man who created that show. You also may know him from his roles in Ocean's 11, 12, and 13, or classic movies like The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, or for directing Steve Martin's first few movies, including The Jerk and The Man with Two Brains. He was on with me a couple of years ago when he wrote an autobiography called I Remember Me, and then he published that and realized I didn't get all the stories in. So last year, he wrote I Just Remembered. And he came on, and we talked about that. And then after that was published, apparently, he said, oh, wait, I still have a few more stories in me. And so he's now out with a new autobiography called What I Forgot to Remember. Carl Reiner, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Paul, this is unbelievable. You played that Dick Van Dyke theme, and in front of me, in my computer, I'm doing my newest book. And I'm going to give you the title of it. How, When, Where, and I Was When the Dick Van Dyke Show Was Born.
I am so glad that you're finally writing the history of the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yes, I'm 11 pages into it, and I think if I live long, I'm 93, I have to live long enough to finish it.
You just keep setting new records for oldest man to publish a book.
I know. Yes, I mentioned that in one of my books. Yes. Yeah. It's not the quality of, comparing myself to the quality of these writers, but as far as being old, I'm the oldest writer I know. I have it in the book. Tolstoy was 60. I don't know. Shakespeare was 38. What is the title of that? It's funny. I got the book in front of me, and I go. What is it? The oldest. I'm looking it up. The jokes I delivered.
Are you Googling yourself, Carl?
Yeah, no, I have the book in front of me, and I'm looking for the titles of the chapters. And the oldest, yeah, I have a book published on page 123.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, one of the things about this book that I absolutely love, and people do tell me they love it too, I have a picture on every page.
Mm-hmm.
When I mention somebody, there's a picture of them.
Your photographic records are remarkable, and I'm glad you saved all those so that you can put them into the book.
Yeah, we also have the fellow who's publishing it with me. We Google things. We find things that on the internet that are mind-boggling. Now here, Tolstoy was 81, Mark Twain 75, Dostoevsky 59, Dickens 58, Edna Ferber 74, Kafka 41. Victor Hugo, 83, among them, Jane Austen, 44, Gertrude Stein, 72, F. Scott Fitzgerald, 54. At the bottom, I say Gore Vidal, 86, Voltaire, 84, Saul Bellow, 90, and Salinger, 91. And I say here, if either Saul Bellow and Salinger had lived a little longer, I probably would have dumped this chapter.
Not only that, you say in the book that you may hold the record for most years, or I guess longest time span, of appearing on television.
Yes. It came about when I was doing Hot in Cleveland with Betty Allen. Betty White, she said that she was called by the Guinness Book of Records, having been in television longer than any woman. And I said, hey, wait a minute. You know something? I think I should get that book, because I was in television when the shows that existed that nobody's ever heard of, the Maggie McNellis Crystal Room, the Fashion Story, the Earl Wrightson Show. And I said, those were in 47, 48, I said. And I remember one of the shows, it was called The Fashion Story, was in the ABC building, that one they have now in New York on 67th Street and 5th Avenue, was an old horse rink. Horses were in that. There was one studio downstairs, and I remember going across the sawdust. There was still the smell of manure. And there was one studio that had the news, and then we did the thing called The Fashion Story, a half hour little situation comedy.
I have worked in some crappy facilities, but that
is the crappiest.
Yes, it was exactly crappy.
Can I go back to the Dick Van Dyke Show for just a moment?
Absolutely.
How good a sketch comedian was your character, Alan Brady?
Well, Alan Brady, how good at what?
A sketch comedian, because that's what he was. I assume that you based him a little bit on Sid Caesar, who was a sketch comedian.
No, as a matter of fact, I'm glad you asked that question, because it was nothing like Sid Caesar.
Oh.
Sid Caesar and I worked together for 9 years. I worked with him, and we lunched every day. He mm-hmm. was a friend.
Yeah.
And maybe the most talented comedian that ever worked in television. No, not maybe, inarguably. But I based the character, you know, you have to have a protagonist, somebody that the hero puts the hero down and has to fight. The hero has to fight for his rights. I based it on three people. One was Phil Silvers, who played in a thing called Top Banana, and he did a combination of Milton Berle, who was a very noisy, loud mouth comedian who yelled at everybody, mm-hmm. blew a whistle when he wanted something, and Jackie Gleason, who never spoke to his writers. They used to write a script. He wouldn't talk to them. They'd have to shove it under his door in his hotel room. And so those three characters were the basis of Alan Brady.
And was Alan Brady their equal in your mind?
Well, yes, but he really wasn't. Because and as a matter of fact, when I first invented that guy, I said, I didn't want to play him. I was looking for somebody. I said, they said, why don't you play him? And I said, you know, it's not going to look right. I said, I'm going to, you know, a second banana. And they're going to say, he's not a. So at the first few years, a couple of years, I had my face buried in a phone, or they shot from my back, or a barber was working, put a towel over my face. And so, and finally we started writing scripts that required more acting from this guy, and we turned him around. I think it was Persky and Denoff who wrote a show called the Two Pay Show. You know,
the one where you reveal that you're actually bald, it's Laura Petrie, Mary Tyler Moore's character, who reveals on national TV that Alan Brady is bald.
Yeah, that was one of the best shows we ever did. It was written by my two guys who saved my life. Bill Percy and Sam Denoff. I was alone for 3 years. I was my own story editor, and I was really, really lonely, and I worked Saturdays and Sundays. And when these two guys came along in the third year and wrote this particular show, I said, they really saved my life. They became story editors. And the last year, when I went to do Russian Succumbing, they actually took over the last 12 shows.
So that was the first time Alan Brady appeared bald on the show. Was that also the first time Carl Reiner was bald on TV?
I walked around bald. As a matter of fact, it was Fred McMurray who once asked me, he says, you walk around bald sometime. He says, he never did. And he says, how do you choose when to wear a wig and when not? I says, well, I wear it when I feel like I want to be tuxedoed. I want to look my best. And if I go to an event that's where 1,000 or 2,000 people are, it's televised, I'll wear it. If I go to a smaller event, I won't wear it. And as a matter of fact, every time I wore it, I always told the audience I was wearing a toupee. I could not feel comfortable lying to them.
You have a story in the new book, What I Forgot to Remember, about the Walnuts episode, which is my all-time favorite, the one with Danny Thomas as the guest star, and Rob thinks he's losing his mind and losing his thumbs as well. And there's a very famous scene where Rob runs to the closet at the front of the Petrie home and opens it up, and Mary Tyler Moore, who looked fantastic, comes spilling out along or on top of I don't know how many walnuts. Do you know how many walnuts it was?
I know exactly. There were 1,000 pounds of walnuts. And when we finished, they said, we can't take them back, the walnut factory, because they're soiled now. So everybody was taking bags of walnuts home. The thing that I loved about that is right in my desk, a foot away from where I'm, if I pulled out a drawer, there's a little walnut. If I open the walnut, there's a little hand with no thumb. And on it, in the very smallest printing done by man, Saul Bass, the great illustrator, wrote, thank you for a wonderful show.
Mm.
And that's been sitting on my desk since then. I felt it was one of our best shows.
You also wrote Jerry Van Dyke in to act as Rob Petrie's brother. He, of course, in real life is Dick Van Dyke's brother. How did that happen?
Well, it was interesting because one day, sitting around the table, he got a call from his brother, and we spoke a while. And I said, "Where is he?" He says, "Well, he's in the he's doing a tour of the Hugh Hefner Playboy clubs." And he says, "He's been on tour for 2 years. He's doing very well." I said, "When's the last time you saw him?" He said, "Oh, a couple of years ago." I said, "Would you like to see him?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Why don't I write a show for him and he can come in?" He said, "Would you?" And I said, "Tell me something about him, anything." He said, "Well, when he was about 8 or 10 years old, he was a sleepwalker. He actually left the house, walked in the street, and people would call and say, 'Pick up your son. He's sitting in my living room."
Wow.
Across the town. And so I said, "That's all I need." And I remember when I started writing it, and I'm sitting at the same desk looking out the same window I did when I wrote that, and I said, "You know, Dick," I said, "can your brother act? Because I can't do this in one episode. I have to have two. Can he act?" "Oh," he says, he can act. He can act." I said, "How do you know?" He says, "Because if he can't, I'll kill him." And he came in. He was sensational.
Carl, you've been on with me so many times, and we've had wonderful conversations about your relationship with Johnny Carson and your appearances on that show. But we're now just 4 shows away from the end of David Letterman's 33-year run.
Oh, boy.
In Late Night.
So sad, so sad.
I wonder if you ever had any kind of relationship with him and what you've thought of your experiences with him.
You know, I think I only think I didn't go do... He's in New York, right?
Yeah.
And that was one of the problems. I didn't get to New York very often. I think I did a couple with him. No, he was always wonderful. I mean, I always thought he was very good and very different. And the thing, when he did that 9/11 broadcast, he showed the depth of his intelligence.
Yep.
And by the way, his replacement, I think, is going to be one of the best ever.
Stephen Colbert?
Yes. He is an extraordinarily gifted man.
Yep.
I heard him being interviewed once straight. I have never heard a more decent human being. I fell in love with him. I say, as a great human being, as a father, as a husband, as a citizen, he's just unusual. I can't imagine what a show is going to be. But for him to play that crazy, turn it upside down and make, he played a right-wing nut, and he played him so well and hurt himself, you know.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in the fall. All right, before I let you go, here we are in St. Louis, Missouri, and you served in the Army at a base here in Missouri, and you have a story in the book about you and your lovely wife, Estelle, honeymooning in Missouri.
By the way, the cover of the book, what I forgot to remember, is a watercolor she did in Neosho, Missouri, when she came to visit me. My wife was an extraordinarily good painter. Doing a watercolor portrait is almost impossible because you make one little mistake, you have to toss it, and you can't repair anything like you can with an oil painting. And this was a one-shot thing. She did it. I mean, I'm looking at it now, and I can't believe how she did it. Well, anyway, take a look at the cover.
I've seen it, and it is beautiful. But tell the story about the little honeymoon. It wasn't even a cottage. It was a room.
Yes, there was somebody. We needed a room to stay in, and it was a three-room apartment that this woman leased out. And we were in the first room. It was a railroad apartment. The second room was, and the third room were two other couples, Army couples. And the bathroom was right next to our room, and all night long, people would be going to the bathroom, passing our bed.
They had to go through your room
to get to their
rooms.
Right by our bed. They brushed their legs brushed our bed as they went to the bathroom.
Wow!
And you know, to have fine consortium time in that kind of situation was very difficult. Finally, we rigged up a line. Clothesline from the wall of near the toilet to the next wall behind us, and we put a sheet up, so we were hidden from view for the last five nights we were there or whatever. I think she was there for 2 weeks.
Wow. That was, it was almost like you were Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable, and it happened one night.
Yes. That happened one night.
Yeah. That's one of the stories, and there are so many more, along with these great pictures from Carl's archives. The book is called What I Forgot to Remember, at least the third in a series of autobiographies. You're taking a break from that to write the Dick Van Dyke book. I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully next year when that one's published, you'll come back on and we can talk a little bit more.
Oh, I would love to, Paul. That means I lived another year. I'll be 94 then.
You got to keep pushing that oldest author thing.
I know.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you, Paul.
Carl Reiner here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.